28 seconds after the hour of 11 in this month of November in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed and flawlessly executed studios of AM 970, Solid Stage Radio. It is Tuesday, and welcome to Day 12. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I am he. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. If you'd like to engage with us electronically, you can do that as well as Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick. Rick Emerson. .com. That's how you do that. And you know how it's going to be a great show because we haven't even started and I'm already getting email yelling at me about stuff. Rick, goddamn you. There is a website called Dead or Alive that can answer your questions like that about Richard Dawson. He's alive. For the love of God, he's alive. Stop it with your incorrect public mouth running. And then it's your sign for no readily apparent reason. Damn it, Jim. There you go. Thank you, sir. I was going to start the day with a scolding. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Your comments, your clarifications, your confessions, your what have you. And your email today is rick at rickemerson.com. Rick at rickemerson.com. The best part was how, like, at 10:30 this morning, for no readily apparent reason, the Jim Cramer show just started playing Christmas music in the background over the top of him. That wasn't even us. Usually when you hear something like that, the odds are about 2 and 3 that when you hear some sort of audio train wreck like that, it's coming from this studio for whatever reason. I'm not trying to place blame. I'm simply saying that oftentimes in radio, buttons are very close together. Multiple audio devices are run through a single channel on the board. Sometimes a computer system just catches fire because there's a gremlin on the wing of the plane! Not this morning. This morning, Sarah and I are sitting in the studio trying to prepare for this this excursion into whimsicality. And Jim Cramer's talking. And then all of a sudden, it's like Gene Autry just starts singing in the background. Like, for no reason. Stare out of the blue. And then you kind of turn and you stare at the monitor speaker for a few seconds. And you kind of wonder if you've finally gone around the bend. If you finally suffered some kind of nervous collapse and all the assembled audio that lurks inside your cerebral cortex has just started randomly firing off the way it's going to do when you're old sometime. You're going to do what the shrinks call responding to internal stimuli, which means you just hear crap in your head that nobody else can hear. No? No, sure enough. It was just coming off the satellite that way. So it's pretty much been the best day already. All right. It's 503-733-2970. If you'd like to email, by God, you can do it. It's rick at rickemerson.com. Rick at rickemerson.com. All right, if you heard yesterday's radio program, you know that there was some unpleasantness involving mailman Chris and his stupid, not the postmistress general, who I understand is a fine woman. It's a fine piece of work is what she's great as, the shining example of humanity, postal and otherwise. It was some guy between the postmistress and Chris who expressed concern about the fact that Chris was somehow able to call in at 11 o'clock even when his shift doesn't start till 10:30. And Chris has claimed that he was on his mid-shift break. That apparently held very little water. That such talk cut no ice with Chris's superior. So I think as of today, I think Chris is going to be calling into the end of the program from now on to wrap up those. Because the way, we had some people actually call and ask what the hell Chris does and why he calls into the beginning of the show. And if I don't know what I'm going to be talking about, why am I doing the program? Why do I need someone to tell me what I'm doing? That's a fair question. It all started because there's a long tradition on this radio program of me just not getting to all the things that I might in a better world get to. And so we decided that we would have what Tony Robbins calls external leverage, which is to mean that somebody other than yourself, through some third-party person, place, or thing, through some external force, you put pressure on yourself by dint of, I don't know, some threatened punishment to make you get stuff done. So the deal is that we came upon this agreement that at the beginning of the show, I forward promote, that is to say, I tease a lot of things that I claim I'm going to get to, and then at the end of the program, I owe Sarah, which is to say the assembled masses, a push-up for everything I haven't gotten to. But then we discovered that we couldn't ever keep track of what I got into and what I hadn't, what I teased, what I hadn't teased, what I thought I was going to talk about, and what I was just making up in my head. So we decided to have Chris, who is a devoted listener and who is out on the out delivering the mail and listening to this radio program, to have him be the official stenographer. And that all went really well until yesterday, when apparently he got yanked into somebody's office and beaten in the face, verbally speaking. So now what's going to happen is he will come out at the end of the program, but here at the top of the program, we'll welcome...
Hold me, like you did by the lake on Naboo.
Our good friend Aaron Geek in the City, Duran. Hello, sir.
What up, man?
How you doing, brother? By the way, I don't have time to play it today, probably. We'll probably get to it maybe tomorrow. But you guys, now when did you do this? The drunken commentary for Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan?
Man, we did it Saturday night. Oh. After spending like 8 hours being idiots at Oricon, we then all piled into Jason's apartment and got hammered and watched Wrath of Khan.
Is this when you left me the drunken voicemail?
Yes.
By the way, I heard the audio of that, by the way, when they're on the phone. I can't hear whatever's happening on... Did you answer the phone, or is it just a voicemail?
No, I guess it's a voicemail. I never check my voicemail, though, so it's on there somewhere.
Yeah, this is the thing, by the way. Just a little note to everybody out there that may in fact, have reason to engage with Sarah and I when we're off the air. Don't ever leave me a voicemail message, because I never listen to that. You leave me a voice, because I like you...
I have 19 of them right now, and I haven't listened to any of them.
See, and that's the other thing, is I don't listen to them either, but I just go through and delete them one
me
by
too.
One.
I just hit four.
Me too. 7, 9, 7, 9.
Yeah. Oh,
7,
is it 7?
9.
Yeah.
Well, on my phone, it's 7. And the thing is, if you leave me a voicemail message, the odds are about 5% that I have ever. The only voicemail messages I listen to are ones that begin with, like, dear credit user or whatever, like somebody that sounds like they're going to sue me. I'll listen to those and occasionally messages from my mom, just to make sure that she's not planning to spring some surprise visit on us. Other than that, though,
I'm on my way down.
Well, that's no. It is with cell phones now, because I don't know how it is with y'all's phones, but mine, there's two different alerts that show up. One that says you have missed a call, and the other one says you've got voicemail. Well, what is the point of that? It seems unnecessarily redundant. Because if there's a thing telling you that you've got a voicemail, well, clearly you missed the call. I mean, if somebody left you a message, it is by definition, it is through, as mathematicians would say, it is the reflexive property that you did not get the call in time. So it gives me twice as many alerts that I got to go through and delete, and I'm real anal retentive about this. Like, I can't have unread messages in my inbox. I don't respond to all of them. Everybody knows I get a lot of email, and so some of it gets responded to, a lot of it doesn't. But I can't have unread email. Like, if I go to my inbox and it says, you have 3 unread messages, I have to read them all. Or even if I don't read them all, I got to click on them all one by one so that my inbox says 0 again. Like, if my inbox just says, like, 2... It just sits there and nags at me. Even if I know what the emails are, even if they're spam, even if I don't care, I can't have unclicked on messages in my inbox, because I'm a weird, obsessive, compulsive freak. So it is with voicemail.
Not the only one, then.
I think a lot of us are like this. Sarah's probably the same way. Mm-hmm. You get these weird compulsions that you can't control. So if I've got voicemail on my phone, if it's somebody I don't care about, if it's somebody I don't want to talk to, if I know what the voicemail is, or sometimes this, I'll be on the phone, and this happens with my wife a lot, I'll be on the phone, she will call me. My phone obviously is busy. I will see that she's calling. I'll end my call as soon as possible so that I can pick her up on the other line. In the meantime, my wife, who should know better, has left me a message. And what is the message? The message is always, hey, it's me, I'm on the other line, call me back. Well, like I don't have eyes, like I can't see that you're calling on the other line. And so what is, so that I will hang up the phone, I'll call her back, we'll talk, we'll get done with whatever, yes, I'll go pick up the dog from his haircutting session, fine. I hang up the phone, and then because I can't sleep otherwise, I will then be compelled to call my voicemail service and listen to the message and blank out the message she left me, even though I know what it is, even though I know it's pointless. I have to get rid of it right away. I can't let it sit on my phone. It drives me crazy. Why are we talking about this?
I knew it started by a dog story. Because Scott drunkenly called Sarah.
Oh, yeah. So at Jason Crump's house this weekend, the Film Fever Radio guys did another one of their drunken commentaries, which will be posted when? Tomorrow or Thursday?
Thursday morning.
Thursday. And
is there profanity in it? Can we play it on the air?
The ones I sent to Rick have been edited You might want to make another pass at him.
Yeah, I'm going to have Scotty double-check those. Aaron sent me a couple clips from the Star Trek II Wrath of Khan commentary, and you guys sound as hammered as you guys sounded on the Strange Brew commentary. You've sounded like 15 times as drunk this time.
Oh, man, this one set the bar so high.
And there's a section, though, where apparently you guys are calling Sarah and leaving her a drunken voicemail message.
Yeah. Scott claims that Sarah told him that he can call anytime he wants.
He can. You guys are amusing.
Scott Daly or Scotty J?
Scotty J, no.
Oh. Scotty J's not allowed to touch the phone. Scotty said the best thing to me yesterday. We were talking about trying to put together a poker game because we had this kind of group of us that was playing poker. And anyway, the more people that we got into the group, paradoxically, the harder it became to schedule a game. And so we're kind of starting from scratch again. And we were kind of making a pass around the building like, hey, who's interested in playing poker? Scotty J came up to me in the kitchen, and he's all excited, literally breathless with excitement. He came up and he said, I asked my wife, and she said I could have the guys over for poker if I wanted. And then he just sort of, like, wiggled his tail and ran away. It was all... It really was cute in a horribly pathetic way.
She should have bite Doritos for us.
What's that?
And she'll bite Doritos.
Yeah, seriously. But we have to put down plastic on the table. All right. So here's what we got coming up today on the Rick Emerson radio program. We have, if it's true, the worst news ever. I don't know that it's true. Sarah's, where did you read it this morning? Is it from a reputable source?
Yes.
I'm not happy about it. So we, if this news, in fact, turns out to be correct, it is...
This is a sad day in Rickland.
It is a sad day in everybody. It is a sad day for every Y chromosome on this earth. And a fair number of X chromosomes. What's that?
Is it only a half to you? You got to confirm it first.
We'll read it. I just don't know if it's true. We'll read the story. We don't care if news is true or not. We'll go ahead and read it anyway. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not.
So Dan cares.
We've got what could be the worst news ever. Michael Richards grovels on television and makes us all cringe uncomfortably in our seats.
Okay.
We read the Inquirer, so you don't have to. Let's see. Lisa Goddard and Jim Roop will grace our airwaves. We'll attempt to reinforce Sarah Dillon's fear of flying by playing Blood Rock's DOA today.
No, you are not.
No, it's an exciting new tradition on the Rick Emerson
Show. It is not.
We'll do it next week when I fly.
You're not deathly afraid of flying.
I am.
No, you're not.
I'm not. But I don't drink. But see, here's the thing. You'll be drunk on the plane. So it's all a wash.
Our friend who's taking us to the airport, we're meeting at a bar.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought you still had some Xanax. Not that you would ever obtain the pills from anybody.
Not that I wouldn't mix them with alcohol. I want to be out.
Mix some antibiotics in there, too.
Oh, man.
That'd work out really well. All right. So there you go, brother. That's what we got today.
All right. So we got the worst news ever. Whether it's true or not, we don't care.
Yes.
Listen to Michael Richards do some groveling.
Yes.
We'll read the Inquirer so that we do not have to. Lisa Goddard, we're going to have the Roop, and then we're going to reinforce Sarah Dillon's fear of flying with some DOA.
Fantastic. That's exactly what we're going to do today, my friend.
And so you can't weasel out of it. I believe mailman Chris has already texted me the confirmed push-up count. You can't take it out.
And what is the push-up? How many push-ups do I owe as of now?
I believe he sent me 58.
God damn, man. It was 39 just a few sweet days ago. All right. Okay. And we may get to the some of your drunken commentary stuff today, but that's probably going to be tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll wait.
All right. And we'll check in with Chris at the end of today's radio program, my friend.
All right.
All right, they go. Thank you, sir. Oh, by the way, did you see that the Clinton Street Theater is doing a double feature?
Yes, I did. If you play the Weekend Geek, it would be there.
Oh.
Tomorrow.
See, Aaron, because of this, you can make him play it every day. You can just remind him.
I can remind him, there's a little something that's waiting in your inbox.
All right, sorry. I'll take care of that today. We'll put the Weekend Geek on that list as well.
All right.
All right, thank you, my friend.
All right.
All right, there you go. Thank you, Del Paxton. There you go. All right, that's Aaron Geek in the city, Duran. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How you feeling?
I don't like you anymore.
Why?
Because you're going to play that horrible song. It scared me when I wasn't flying.
Here's the thing.
No!
I'm just saying, if I don't expose you to this, you'll never become desensitized to it. That's
desensitized to Blood Rock?
To Blood
Rock. To DOA.
Blood Rock! You know, the story of Blood Rock is a pretty fascinating story, too.
Please don't tell us.
I'm just saying, they're a band from Texas, so they recorded this one infamous song called DOA, and then I swear to God, the next year they became a Christian rock band. That's the best thing about them. They recorded this, my legs are gone, I'm covered in blood.
We are not listening to that.
And then the next year, suddenly they were still covered in blood, but it was the blood of Christ. And they don't play DOA anymore.
I wonder why.
Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Well, well, well. The Clintons' neighbors in Chappaqua, at least one of them is dead, and another has been shot. Bill and Hillary's neighbor at their house.
Okay, I wasn't really expecting that. That kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
All right, then.
So we don't know what they did. Meanwhile, now Hillary's campaign war chest is emptying after spending $30 million to get reelected. A Fox parent company, News Corporation, is accused of accepting hush money to kill OJ's deal. And it's day two for Kramer's racial tirade apology tour.
Fantastic. Hey, who watched Letterman last night?
I never watched Letterman.
I watched it with the sound off.
Did you?
I was at a bar.
Last night?
Yeah.
So you just, did you see him shifting uncomfortably?
It was so awkward.
You didn't listen to the sound, though?
No, no.
Oh, you don't know from awkward. Okay.
Are you going to play it?
Where's my phone? I'm going to read you this text message I got last night. Hold on a second. This is, here's a text message. This is from, Joni DeRoshi. She sent me this last night. Let's see here. Where is it? Joni sent me this email last night about, I don't know, whenever it was, like around 12:01. Subject line, oh man. And she says, is this Michael Richards' apology and Letterman the most uncomfortable thing ever or what? My skin is crawling off of my bones. It was, and you know, I mean, how horrible slash great is this that Seinfeld was already booked to be on? I mean, that's either great luck or terrible luck. I don't know which, because you know, the Seinfeld is just, it probably is terrible luck for him because, you know, Seinfeld would have given anything not to have had to be in front of however many people watched Letterman last night.
You know what it looked like? If you go into a courtroom and somebody's arraigned and they're still in jail and they show them on camera already in jail.
Totally.
That's what it looked like.
Exactly. That, like when Sarah and I went to the court for you when the woman hit your car and they were talking to the Russian guy. You know, on the TV screen.
That was crazy.
They're talking to him via closed circuit television. He's wearing the county orange and the manacles, you know, and so did you cut this guy's head off? Yes, I cut off head. You know, and he's just, and you're right, he's in that low level lighting. So we might as well play this here. And then we'll break and we'll talk to Lisa Goddard. Let me see if I can bring up this audio from this is Michael Richards from last night. Let me go to the right. No, I gotta play it though because it's so cringe-inducingly awful. Let's see, Richards' apology. But see, it'll be less dramatic if we're all here to hold the people's figurative hands and to bring them through it. So Seinfeld was already booked to be on Letterman last night, and I mean, just what are the odds of that? It's like a billion. And of course, you know why he was on there. This is the other reason why Seinfeld's got to be pissed. He was on there to pimp season 7, which just came out on DVD yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Or today, rather. What is today? Tuesday? Yeah. So season 7. And the funny thing is, because season 7 of Seinfeld comes out today at CD Game Exchange, everywhere you went on the net last night were banner ads for Seinfeld. Everywhere. I actually went and I was reading a story about Michael Richards screaming racist slurs, and then right over to the left is like, buy Seinfeld on DVD. It was fantastic. And so Seinfeld's on there last night just looking, just that real sort of polite and prissy kind of pissed off.
He does seem really pissy. He has that air about him
totally.
All the time.
Totally. I don't think Jerry Seinfeld, he doesn't strike me as a bad guy, but he does strike me as a little, and prissy is sort of the word for that,
too. Yeah, as just being comedian, that's
he seems a little, like he could very easily become snippy, and snippy is exactly the right word for it. You know, he could very easily see someone next Tuesday. That is sort of the vibe I get off that guy. Again, not a bad guy, but I mean, he seems very much like a type A personality. And here's Michael Richards just mucking up the works. They bring on Michael Richards, who looked bad, by the way. Hair all short, eyes all sunken, gaunt, just sitting there. And then he started to get pissed off halfway through. He's like, I'm not a racist! It's like screaming it. Like, so let's play a little bit of this. This starts with, I believe this starts with Letterman. Introducing Mike, and it's, by the way, very...
Oh, I don't want to hear that.
No, and it's awful. And by the way, it's also very telling that they didn't have him on the show. They didn't fly him in. I mean, like 48 hours. This was, what, Friday night that this happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Friday night, last night's Monday. That's 3 days. You could take a pony to New York and get there in 3 days. Not for him. No, they're going to put him... They're going to do that thing Bill Maher does. They just put the guest on the screen, so if the guest becomes boring or belligerent, gone. So this is Michael Richards on David Letterman last night.
Why don't you explain exactly what happened for the folks who may not know?
I lost my temper on stage. I was at a comedy club trying to do my act, and I got heckled, and I I took it badly and went into a...
In fact, you know, I'm gonna actually play this a different way, Sarah. I'm gonna bring this up. Where's the apology? I'm gonna bring this up in the Windows Media Player here, so I can pause it if I have to.
Why don't you explain exactly what happened for the folks who may not know?
For the one person,
I lost my temper on stage. I was at a comedy club trying to do my act, and I got heckled, and I took it badly and went into a rage, and.
So the laughter.
Said some pretty nasty.
You'll actually hear Seinfeld in a second tell the crowd not to laugh. He gets all like school teachery about it.
Nasty things to some Afro-Americans. Trash talk. And stop laughing. It's not funny.
And
you've got to excerpt that.
You're ruining my career.
Scotty, get that.
My residuals are screwed.
We'll use that a lot.
Let's hear that one more time. And he says Afro-Americans, which is not like an offensive term, but hello, it's not 1959. So clearly someone is living on planet yesteryear.
And
wait for it.
Stop laughing. It's not funny.
You were actually being heckled, or were they just talking and disturbing the act?
Times. That was going on, too.
Uh-huh. Long silence.
And did you...
I know, I mean, hearing your audience laugh, you know, and it's I'm not even sure that this is where I should be addressing the situation. I've already heard you make some jokes about it, and that's okay, you know, but I'm really busted up over this, and I'm very, very sorry to those people in the audience.
Those people.
The blacks, the Hispanics, the whites, everyone that was there that took the brunt of that anger and hate and rage and how it came through, and I'm concerned about more hate and more rage and more anger coming.
This is the best part. And then he starts talking about Hurricane Katrina. Fantastic. No, he does. What about the hurricane victims, Dave?
Coming through, not just towards me, but towards...
Shift?
Defocus. A black-white conflict. There's a great deal of disturbance in this country and how blacks feel about what happened in Katrina.
Bam!
And you know, many of the comics...
Look over there.
Many performers are in Las Vegas and New Orleans trying to raise money for what happened there. And...
Quick, think about something else.
One
for
of
this
them?
To happen, no. For me to be in a comedy club and flip out and say this crap, you know, I'm deeply, deeply sorry.
And angry.
And... I'll get to the force field of this hostility, why it's there, why the rage is in any of us, why the trash takes place, whether or not it's between me and a couple of hecklers in the audience, or between this country and another nation.
Let me interrupt you for a second.
Really, what about Iraq? This is really.
I don't want to hear anymore.
This is really. Oh, we're not even halfway done.
It says this article he made amends, so I guess it's okay.
But really, Tim, what about Iraq? That's really the larger issue here with Michael Richards.
What about Afghanistan?
For a second, and ask a question about had the people doing the heckling, or the people who were not paying attention, had they been white or Caucasian or any other race, what would have been the nature of your response then?
It may have happened. You know, I'm a performer. I push the envelope. I work in a very uncontrolled manner on stage. I do a lot of free association and spontaneous. I go in the
character.
I do. I don't know. In view of the... of the situation and the act going where it was going, I don't know. The rage did go all over the place. It went to everybody in the room.
What you should always do
when you're all the way to Fresno,
in the mean streets. What you should always do, by the way, when you're apologizing for this, is start hitting the podium when you're talking, which is what he's doing. He's all like, "I'm not an angry person," and he's hitting the podium while he talks.
But you can't. You know, I know people could, blacks could feel, I'm not a racist. That's what's so insane about this. I don't, and yet, it's said, it comes through, it fires out of me. And even now in the passion
yes, the passion.
That's here as I confront myself.
Did you think that somehow by being outrageous and completely inappropriate that it might somehow make the situation diffuse it a bit or make it seem lighter than it was?
I tried to do that. You don't have the whole thing there with what they're showing.
I tried to diffuse it by screaming ethnic slurs at the audience. I thought that would mellow everybody out. I thought it would calm the situation if I talked about lynchings.
Everyone, I tried to jujitsu that, try to move.
That's what I'm going
to
do from now on.
You know, you do that. I'm on a microphone, and I'm trying, but it didn't work out. It was a...
He's just grasping
about
it.
A bad
yeah,
match,
yeah, that's
you know?
So good. That's,
and they're just letting him hang himself.
What happened afterward? Did you talk to the people and apologize to them?
Yeah, I went out there. I tried. I went out there.
And you know, in his head, Letterman is just going 5.2 share, because he beat Leno last night. Letterman just pounded Leno, which never happens. And they're just... And he's... You're watching it, and you realize he's just out there, just throwing his own, to use his own metaphor, just hanging himself, man, just throwing a rope right over that tree, right on television, climbing up on the ladder, and then he's just twisting. They're just letting him ramble on.
I did talk to some people. I went back to the club that night to get back on the stage and to work, to get back on the horse, as they say, and I did. I apologized to quite a few people, but I didn't talk to all of everyone. They left, and I don't know how to get in touch with those people. And then, of
with
course,
the Afro-American
they've gone
community.
To press, as I think they should. The fact that there's that kind of solidarity and confronting that kind of those kinds of remarks, I think it's important for the Afro-American community to make sure this kind of crap.
Yes, they all get together and have a big meeting. They all get together and have a summit.
Crap. Doesn't come about. I'm sorry that it happened.
And having apologized, is there much more you can do? Much more you would like to do?
I just have to do personal work.
Feed the poor.
I
get a ladle soup somewhere.
I guess I'm still reeling from this. It's just been a few days. I don't know.
Listen to that awkward pause again.
Much more you can do? Much more you would like to do?
One. Two.
I just have to do personal work.
One. One. Two. Three. Four. Five.
I'm still reeling from this. It's just been a few days. I don't know yet.
Jerry, is there anything you want to say to Michael here?
I know Michael many years, and I know how he works on stage, and none of that justifies what happened, but, I've been talking to him today, and he's someone that I love, and I know how shattered he is about this, and he deserves a chance. That's why I want him to come on. He deserves a chance to apologize, and that's all he wanted.
And we're
thank
done.
Thank you for letting
me know. Did you just try to bring it down the curtain?
Thank you very much, Michael.
No gifts
in the education. I know it's difficult, and I certainly hope you don't have regrets about being on this show this evening. Thank you.
Dan, we're done. And you can tell that they cut his audio, too, because of the amateurs, like, his mouth is moving like a whole life. Moving his mouth, nothing coming out. Good times. All right, we're so behind. We got a break here. We'll break. Scotty, can you tell Lisa Goddard that we have to break if we need to get right back with her, if she needs to get right back with us at maybe 35 of this Michael Richards thing. And Katrina. They've put us behind. Iraq has put us wavy. That's really the tragedy here.
Dr. King's speech.
The Afro-American community, as though he's just going to go door to door. All right, we'll take a break here. We'll come back. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up, Lisa Goddard will read the Inquirer, so you don't have to. Dennis Pitzenbarger here later on. The Week in Geek. Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. You stay right there.
Stop. I got an excerpt.
All right, hello. It's 503-733-2970. Don't forget Seinfeld Season 7 out on DVD now. 503-733-2970. Let's all go back and watch that episode where Kramer stomps up and down in a Puerto Rican flag. That'll be funny. That won't be difficult to watch now. What can you do? It's Rick at RickEmerson.com if you'd like to engage with us electronically.
Or him with the smoke shop Indian.
Total. it's all about context, isn't it, kids? All right. Let's all take a moment. Yeah. I'm sorry, you're doing an Indian call?
That was what he was doing. Remember, I just watched the episode the day before yesterday.
All right. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome from the Hill, CNN radio correspondent to the stars, woman about town, fashionably attired, with a head full of knowledge, Lisa Goddard. How are you, sister?
Good. How are you?
I am dandy. Oh, am I interrupting lunch or something?
Yeah, I do. I probably still do have a little bit of lunch in my teeth still.
All right. That's okay. I promise not to look.
Since we're being honest.
It's okay. I will avert my eyes whenever possible. All right. Hey, how's life going for everybody that's not Michael Richards today?
I'll tell you what. Yeah, much better than for him. And it really was so awkward on Letterman, huh? Because you could tell people thought, oh, is this going to turn out to be a big crazy joke.
It's a big kooky Andy Kaufman stunt.
Right, that's what it felt like. Is this going to be some kind of I really am smarter than all of you?
No, it's
Kaufman thing. And it was not.
I remember just sitting there watching that this morning and just shifting uncomfortably in my seat, just waiting, unable to turn away, but just wanting it desperately to be over. Jerry Seinfeld, you know what Jerry Seinfeld looked like? Jerry Seinfeld sat there with a look on his face like a dad when his kid gets caught stealing something at the store, and you go back and tell the man what you stole, Jerome, you know, and then just sitting there, and then the kid is, I stole this piece of candy, you know, and then the father's sitting there and just, you know, just it's anger mixed with, like, embarrassment, mixed with irritation, mixed with, you know, I'm late for my poker game. So it was, this has been a very strange week for celebrities.
Very awkward, yes, indeed. Yes, but it shows you, and this is a note to you personally, comedians, you can't get in trouble because it's awkward.
No, Sarah and I were talking about this during the break, and Sarah was saying, well, you know, I feel bad for him because he's obviously just, you know, he was angry and whatever. You know,
but, kind of a nut.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't care how drunk I ever got. I don't care how drunk any of us ever got. That would never be my preferred mechanism for engaging with an audience. That would just not happen. So, well, what can you do? Hey, so let's talk about Charlie Rangel. I can't really do a Charlie Rangel. The guy on Stephanie Miller.
Mine as well.
What's that?
Rangel.
Yes. See, Charlie Rangel sounds a lot like Jack Klugman from The Odd Couple.
Oh, that's not bad.
He kind of has that same sort of, you know, Felix, where are my steaks? Or, you know, whatever it is he would say. So Charlie Rangel is doing, and I the only reason I feel like I have to talk about this is because it is one of those sort of symbolic things that the symbolism, as it goes through the news cycle, gets stripped away from it, and it suddenly just becomes presented in these really stark, I think, sort of non-representative terms. But Charlie Rangel, and he's done this several times in the past, right, where he stepped up and demanded that we institute a draft.
Yes.
And this is sort of his shtick. And when I say shtick, I mean it's kind of his pet.
He likes bringing this up.
It's his pet attention-getting device. So what from his...
Right. Yeah.
What does it sound like you needed?
I was about to launch into an impression, but it wasn't going to go well.
You sound like one of those geeks in my gym class that needs an inhaler. So from Charlie Rangel's perspective, what is this call for the draft about?
Well, what he is saying, or what he seems to be saying anyway, is that he says if we're going to be at war, it should be the brunt of the responsibility should be spread evenly across society. Versus he's saying right now it's spread unevenly on people who may not have as much, who especially people who are poor, low income, don't have money, other opportunities, people who need jobs, basically. He's saying they take more of the sacrifice on their shoulders than the rest of society. And he's saying if we're going to be at war, we need to spread it across the board.
Now, does he only suggest this because he knows that it'll never happen?
I think so. I do question whether, if a draft were a serious consideration, how much he would be pushing it. I think he would be forced to vote for it because that's his stance, and it's very well publicized. But I don't know if he would be speaking out as loudly. And, you know, his staffers and those who know him say that he would be, that he's consistent on this, but you've got to question that. It's very easy to bring this up and to be a sort of bomb thrower when you know you're not actually going to, you're throwing a bomb into the desert.
And Nancy Pelosi, she didn't waste any time in saying, like, not going to happen. Never, you know.
No.
Yes.
That's basically, no.
And I mean, is that, so when they have a guy, and we've actually talked about this before, the designated bomb thrower party. And I mean, yeah. So does somebody like, here's a weird question. If from your perspective, and you sort of have a, you know, because you're a political junkie and so forth. And from your vantage point, sort of close to the bosom of American politics, let's take the Democrats in this case, as much as they may publicly distance themselves from you know, the guy, this position by Charlie Rangel, or a guy like Howard Dean, or on the other side, as much as the Republicans sort of tried to distance themselves as time went on from Newt Gingrich, do the parties really appreciate having the sort of rabble-rousing kind of nutcase guys in the party to sort of stir things up and to be the sharp stick in the eye?
Yeah, I think a lot of people up here do like that for two reasons. One, a lot of these folks would like to be that person, but they know that they might not get elected again. They know their chances for being president would be shot. And frankly, some of them are cowardly, and they wouldn't go this far. But the other reason is this makes everybody else look like they're more moderate. It makes them all look like they're not crazy. It makes Charlie Rangel look like he's more of an extreme. So, you know, two reasons. They like it on both sides.
So this is like if you're fat, you hang out with fatter people.
Maybe that's it. You know, he does have a point, but what he is saying very definitively, he wants a draft right now. And he says it's because he thinks also that we need more troops in general, or if we're going to stay in Iraq, you know, we need to have a draft. Then that gets into the whole rest of the Iraq argument. Should we have more troops, keep it the same, or...
Well, my response would be that by definition, we don't need more troops, because if we needed more troops, they'd be over there. I mean, it just seems like a binary proposition that if we needed more troops, they'd be coming to get more troops to ship over there right now. And maybe they, who knows, maybe that's in the pipeline.
That argument is saying then, well, if the president wanted to, if we should do it, the president would be doing it.
Right.
That sounds almost like you're sort of giving the White House a little carte blanche there.
Well, I know, I'm just saying, I guess my point is that everybody says, well, I mean, if we need more troops, then we're going to have to, I guess...
Do we have the troops? Is that your question?
Well, you know, I'm just saying it's sort of an academic argument at this point. I'm just saying that it seems like if there really was a massive provable shortage, they wouldn't even be talking about it. They'd just be doing it. You know, I mean, I remember when I was 18, going and filling out my selective service card. I think I'm safely beyond the reach, what with my encroaching old age and so forth. But you know,
you're right. It is a really serious argument, though, because some people say, we are at a shortage. If we were to enter into any other conflict right now, if we were to be attacked, we would be in very bad shape domestically.
Just as a side note to this, and I want to ask you real briefly, because we are getting towards the Thanksgiving season. Yes. After I've already started pulling horrible stories about the holidays. we had a guy electrocuted putting up his Christmas lights this morning. I'm going to put all of those into a pile, and we're going to begin our Joy of Christmas segments as soon as the Thanksgiving holiday is over. So we'll get to this Christmas thing, just a touch on that here in a second. But just a side note to this Iraq thing and the draft and so forth. We had a bunch of interview clips with John McCain. It was either yesterday or Friday, where McCain was saying, I don't understand that guy. And I'm not saying he's wrong or that he doesn't have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
But for a guy who positioned himself as an independent and as sort of a maverick and so forth, I'm not saying that he has to be diametrically opposed to the Bush administration's policies all the time. But McCain was saying, like, well, we need to put more troops in Iraq. He was saying exactly what I was just talking about. That we need to put more troops there. In what world does he think that that's going to get him votes in 08?
Well, there's your argument that he is independent, that he's doing what he thinks is right instead of what he thinks voters will support. That's one way. That's how they would spin it. That's how the McCain camp would say, well, he's doing what he thinks is right. He knows this isn't popular, but he thinks it's the right call.
Well, all right.
I don't know. But, yeah, so Thanksgiving, I know we've got to talk about the holiday spending stuff, but I do have a Thanksgiving. I know you all have a show, right, on Thanksgiving?
We will be here presenting entertainment to the people as we always do.
You are so good.
Well, it's Rick Emerson Cares.
People's minds.
No, it's true. I could play so-called best ofs, but I mean, that's sort of a relative statement in terms of this show anyway. So, you know, I'm kind of a slave to routine anyway. And if I have, I don't really know how to deal with time off. I just sort of sit on the couch and twiddle my thumbs and shift around uncomfortably. So I might as well be here. So I don't know if you all will be on the clock on Thanksgiving, but we will be here.
I will be covering the Macy's Parade in New York.
Fantastic. Well, see, and the great thing about that is there's always a chance that one of those balloons is going to lose part of its altitude and crash into a crowd of pedestrians.
But here's the thing. You know, I'm supposed to do these stories ahead of time on this. You know, I'm thinking Macy's gets so much publicity every year. Surely there's other parades that are worth covering. And it turns out there is a fantastic parade. If you all are interested, I'm sure I can get you the number of some people involved. In Jacksonport, Wisconsin, maybe 100 people get together. It's truly a very sad and hilarious statement. And the town itself is two blocks long. The town is too small for a real parade. So what they do is they start out, go down the street, turn around, and come back.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and so at one point, the parade is actually on both sides of the street.
Oh, okay. Well, hold on a second, because now I will be here, Tim Ryder will be here, Scotty J will be here, Sarah Dillon, actually, Sarah's going to meet her boyfriend's family.
Plans, darling. Ooh,
she's in Wisconsin.
She's going to be in Wisconsin. The best part of this is she's going to be sleeping in an unheated farmhouse.
Outstanding.
So it's like one big... It's like one.
She made that noise that you don't like.
Noise.
Do it right.
I can't really do it either. It really is going to be like one big Tennessee Williams, experience. Just going back to like live. You're going to be sleeping in a shack somewhere. So.
And they had to pull me aside yesterday and say, like, you know, it is 2006 there too. They do have cars and internet. I'm like,
Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be right up. I guess a couple miles. I don't know, some direction outside of one of the big, out of Madison.
Okay, because now where is this parade in Wisconsin you're talking about?
It's Jacksonport. It's in Door County, Wisconsin, and I've got to admit, I don't know exactly where that is.
Okay, but your boyfriend Nate is listening, sir, so if he can tell us, because how great would it be for you to go there and cover this parade? The town is, how big is the town?
Actually, what Sarah planned to do. Yeah, it was 779, but they just had two babies born, so it's 781.
And the town is two blocks long.
Yeah, the town is about two blocks long.
Come on, you could go cover the Jackson blah 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 parade.
I'll totally go. You know,
okay. They don't have a permit for this parade.
Well,
so if you happen to need to drive through town at the time of the parade, and they say this has happened, you just get in the parade.
It's fantastic. It really is. If you close your eyes, you can almost hear the voice of Garrison Keillor speaking. You know what I mean?
Oh, no. Now you're ruining it.
No. I'm just saying, it is one of those. It is like you expect Charles Kuralt. I mean, if he weren't dead.
Keillor, right. There.
Yeah. All right. Well, I can't really top that. Well, screw this holiday thing. I was going to talk about this. Here's what I was going to do. I was going to read, here's the other little tease on your news, which is, how much will you be spending this holiday season? A 10 a.m. press conference is scheduled to give their annual consumer survey spending. I don't even know why they put this in. The Americans are going to spend way too much, and they're going to spend the rest of the year selling off their possessions and bone marrow to try to get themselves out of debt. The end.
Right. They'll go without heat and medicine.
Unless you're in Wisconsin, in which case that's already kind of a dodgy proposition.
Exactly. So they're good. Yeah, basically they say people have had a tough year. That despite, again, the many times we've heard that the economy is doing well, and some numbers are, of course, good, that consumers are hurting. A lot of people, the mortgage, the credit card debt, and about a third of shoppers say they're going to spend less this year. They're going to try. Now, they think that all of those guys will end up spending more, but they're planning to spend less.
No, everybody plans to. Here's the thing. When people say they plan to spend less, that's like when people on a Tuesday night get invited out and they plan to go home early and only have one beer.
Right.
And instead you go home at 4 in the morning, you're missing a shoe, and you've got a strange note tattoo on the side of your face, and you're not quite sure who the woman in bed with you is.
Right. I just got a 4:30 a.m. Call from a good friend of mine last night. It's true.
It's all of, hey, you got to come out with us.
Exactly. I'm so happy for you. That was on the message. I saw the phone ring. I said, oh, I'm no.
Is it a lot of like, that Jason Kubert's a great guy or something. I got to go. Woo.
And then it's just, oh, I wish you were here. I'm drinking a shot for you. Yeah.
Fantastic.
You should have your wedding in a bar.
If you come to Portland, we can make that happen, actually.
Hey.
And it wouldn't even be all that peculiar. All right. By the way, just as a side note, I have an email here. Somebody says he believes the draft age has been, unless you are disabled or just really dumb, the draft age has been increased to 35. I don't know if that's true or not.
Oh, I can check in that. I've heard that, too. I don't know that for sure.
So there it goes. I can be, so I can. be doing my show from, you know, Kazakhstan.
I'll cripple you.
Hey, thank you. That's love.
You're welcome.
Right there. Would you shoot me in the foot if I asked you to?
Totally.
Excellent. There you go. That's true affection, friendship right there. All right, Lisa Goddard, we will speak to you later on in the week. So enjoy your parade experience, and we'll be talking to you very soon.
All right, done.
All right, there you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, CNN radio correspondent on the Hill. Fantastic.
So I guess Door County is over 3 hours from where I'm going to be.
Why would... I don't understand.
It's supposedly a really rich community.
I don't understand the layout of states like that. You know what I mean? When something is 3 hours away, and here's the thing. You know that there's nothing between Madison and Door County. It's 3 hours of nothing. You know what I mean?
But there are Amish folk that are
in Wisconsin,
yeah,
really?
In their buggies, yeah.
Okay.
I am so excited to see them.
They're the easiest to mug, you know. They don't put any resistance at all. Amish girls are easy. No, it's true. The thing about laying out towns like that is when it's like writing computer code. It's like writing basic computer code where everything is line 10, line 50, line 100, line 150. Got to leave yourself lots of room there for additional lines of code for no real readily apparent reason. That's what those states, that's like layaway. Utah's that way.
So you're going to want me to call from Wisconsin?
Totally. Call from the unheated farmhouse.
Okay, I will.
Now, look.
Nate's a farm boy.
Perhaps Nate's family are, maybe they're people of limited means. I was going to ask, why don't they have a regular house you can live in?
No, they have, it's a regular house. They had a farm, and then I think they tore the farm down. They had, like, sheep and all kinds of crops, and he was working really early in the morning ever since he was a little kid, from, like, 5 a.m. until school time.
Explain
the
whole lot.
He gets back from school, yeah, and then works until dark.
Yeah, it's all becoming so clear.
Seriously, I know, and I'm, yeah.
You are not a farm girl. You are the furthest thing I could possibly think. You're a farm girl the way that I'm a country boy. I don't care whether I'm from a hick town or not. I mean, in my family, like, my brother has a farm, and it's a part of my family. But me, not so much. Well, I am totally not that.
Oh, well, his dad is a truck driver, so he isn't at home very much. So he only heats the bottom part of the house. And we're staying upstairs.
It's only flat there on the bottom. Oh, God. All right. The common clay of the New West. Salt of the earth, people. Have fun.
And then he informs me that...
I'm going to be here underneath an electric blanket, by the way, eating Cheetos.
He informed me that after we fly to Chicago, I guess we have to take one of those small little planes that I'm deathly terrified of from Chicago to Madison.
That's fantastic. You're going to eat like pig's feet or something while you're there, too?
I don't know.
Yeah, good times. All right, it's 503-733-2970.
We need to answer the question today, too, whether or not I can bring mini bottles on the plane in my baggie.
Oh. I think it's great, by the way, that that's the real pressing question in your life. That's the thing that really needs to be answered. All right. Mini bottles. If you know whether Sarah can bring mini bottles in her bag, please now to be calling. 503-733-2970. See, what are you flying there, like a Cessna or something? It's like some guy in like a crop duster?
I guess it's like some 16-person jet, but anything that only holds 16 people is not a jet.
No, it's really not, and even if they claim it is.
I've flown one of those from Seattle to Pullman once.
It was the worst, or whatever they call it. Yeah.
It was the worst experience.
It's terrifying. I've only ridden on one of those planes once. And I know we're running a little late here, but riding in one of those planes, one of those little, or like a dual prop little plane, or like whatever those planes are that are always crashing and killing people.
Oh, my God!
Well, I'm sure it won't happen to you. But
Rick!
Remember, if you're trapped in the mountains, always the butt. That's where you want to go first, eating-wise. Here's the thing. Flying in planes like that is like riding motorcycles. And I know this makes me sound like a pussy, but what are you going to do? I've talked about this before, that I am not a motorcycle enthusiast. It's not a thing. I like a big box of steel around me, you know, between me and the ground. And, man, it's like when I was a kid, I was like 7, 8, 9. My dad would like put my dad and my older brothers are all real like motorcycle guys and Harley guys or whatever, and they would like stick me on the back of this. I remember clear as day being like 8 years old. My brother, we're going to the store. Get on the back of my hog, and like sitting on the back of this Harley Davidson, 8 years old, with my brother, just terrified out of. I am still traumatized by that. Every time you go around the corner, every time you go through a puddle, every time you see loose gravel ahead on that motorcycle, you think you're about to die. And being a passenger on a motorcycle is much more terrifying than being the driver, because not only are you there whizzing through the air at like 50 miles an hour, no protection, you have no control. You realize it's all up to your meth-using brother and God, whether you live or not. That's the same thing with flying in those airplanes. and roller coasters. You know, that airplane is like a roller coaster, too. Motorcycles, roller coasters, and those little puddle jumper airplanes are all the same in that. The same thing that terrifies you, which is being thrown around by turbulence or bumping or the shuddering of the plane, what you find terrifying, what always happens? Everybody else in the plane laughs because they think it's an adventure.
Uh-huh.
You're riding along in the plane. How many times has this happened to you? I'm not trying to freak you out, but I'm trying to commiserate. You're in the plane. You go through that patch of rough air turbulence. Boom, 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 boom. In a plane jerking around in the air. And what happens? Ding, 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 ding. The light goes on. Fasten seatbelt. And you're like, this is it. The pilot knows we're going to die.
I only start panicking when I see the stewardess or whoever
buckling
it is
in.
Buckling in.
And so,
oh, yeah, that's happened to me before.
You're in the plane for long. You know, the plane's jerking. What happens? The guy's next to you. Oh, rough ride. Woo. And it's like you just want to gouge out their eyeballs with a spoon. No pressure.
Thanks.
I got to fly to Provo next week. If I die, I'll die in Utah. How sad
is that? I have to fly across the country.
Yeah, that is worse. All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Take a break after this. Don't go anywhere. We will return. The Rick Emerson Show comes back next with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Don't go anywhere.
1995, you're twisting this as a razor pursue my music. Yes, and now that we stand, up, now that we fall. Together, we can stand tall. Brothers that try to work it out to get mad. Revolt, revive, realize.